maio e a Fiona posso ocupar. Por bom tempo para o sol tentei olhar, mas lágrimas começaram a brotar. Eu em Paris e sim poder voar. O sol é uma estrela de tipo espectral, ilumina medio mundo a passar. Foge longe, o nosso existirá. Enquanto povo emos o mesmo espaço solar. O que me dizem é comovedor. Pensas em mim quando vês esse resplendor. Nunca iba, quisera eu estar. O calor nos toca como o mesmo vigor. Te digo ao caminhar pela ponte até o Palais Royal, as pessoas pensam que é necessário falar, mas um rosto ao ser um melhor radar. Minha tristeza faz a sós mais rápido girar, se por aqui mas lá começa a despontar. A veces fico seco y me paso soñar que nuestra historia luego volverá a comenzar.
Listening Tide. Today, the Listening Tide has yet again another special episode. It's roaming. We are broadcasting from the living room of our guest, Sofia Hernandez-Chonkui. Thank you, Sofia, for being our guest, especially for hosting us. Very kind. And what we were listening to, what was that to begin with?
Yeah, that was a musical piece commissioned for the Bienal de Mercosur in Porto Alegre in 2013, and it's a work by Mario Garcia Torres. Mm-hmm. The song is called O Mesmo Espacio Solar, and the album, it's one of eight pieces in the album, is titled Un Cabola, Un Portosa.
Mm. For the listeners at home, it's a non-visual podcast program. Of course, the album is sitting here on the table. The artist, this work, his person, his practice, is very dear to you. Do you want to say something more about the album cover, or perhaps something about the album itself first?
I have many things to share with you about
I'm
this
sure, yeah.
about this piece and about the album at large and La Biennale, I would make a couple of references. But thank you very much, first of all, for coming to Rotterdam.
Pleasure.
I'm very happy that you're here and that we're doing this podcast, that you're focusing on sound pieces.
Yeah.
Many visual artists that I've worked with have worked with sound and music in this case in particular. Mario Garcia Torres has been doing so since 2004 and in many different ways. The album that song that I want to talk about today is in, it's an album that is titled in Portuguese, as I said, Um Cabolá, Um Portosá, which means Cape Town over there,
right,
and a port here. And it's referring to the two sites that are being discussed actually in this song, in addition to a third site that I'll talk about right now, which is on the one hand the city of Porto Alegre as the so-called destination not just of the Biennale but also of an imagined audience and in this case listener of this song.
Yeah.
And secondly, a Cape Town which is in the tip of the peninsula of Baja California,
right,
in Mexico, which is the most southern tip where a hotel is called Hotel Ganso, which is where Mario Garcia Torres and a group of musicians and producers gathered for about a week to...
When was this?
This is in, and actually it's mentioned in the piece, it's actually in May of 2013.
Okay.
May is another reference, and it's the reference to an exchange that Takis, the Greek artist, and David Medalla, the Filipino artist, both of them just recently passed away, or not so many years ago. They're discussing the place of the sun and the sun as a way in which people can communicate with each other. But anyhow, the album record on one side has an illustration of Cabo San Lucas, which is in the tip of Baja California,
yeah,
which is where the hotel is, where they're actually writing the songs and recording the songs. And on the other hand, on the other side of the album is an illustration of a main street in Porto Alegre, where there is a hotel, which is where it was the official hotel of the Bienal de Mercosur. And there's a little bridge that connects an avenue of the old town with a street of the newer town. The street is looking at the horizon, or from the illustration, from the point of view of the image in the horizon would be the lake Guaíba, which is a huge lake that you don't see from the horizon an end to it, so it actually appears like an ocean.
Right.
And
does it have a tide? Actually, do you know? Sorry.
A tide, it does. It does, and it has also an island, a prison island during the dictatorship in Brazil. But ultimately, it's these two sides of the cover of the music album, and they are connected not just by the bind, but also by a flock of birds that travels from one side of the cover up until the back. So from apparently one city to the other, the flock of birds are connected as a kind of in the air migratory being that is there. The one of the of the front cover of the Baja California, it's actually just the sea and the horizon and a whale diving in the sea. You can only see the tail.
Yeah, just that little bit of the last tail. And yeah, what brought Mario Garcia Torres there with others to make music, to make sound, to investigate, was also because of these circumstances.
Yeah. Well, it was a commission. And the reality, I was curating, I was the artistic director and chief curator of the Bienal de Mercosur. And in my capacity to, you know, with the opportunity to commission, he's one of the artists that I invited. And initially, like one from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And he's an artist that I have been collaborating with for 25 years or more. I know him since the 1990s when we were in school in Mexico. And since then, we've continued a dialogue. And it's many times ended up involving commissions for one museum or an exhibition. In this case, for the Bienal de Mercosur, I was very inspired to do all aspects of the communication of the Biennale to be actually an art commission or to involve some kind of different technology. So artists were invited by telegram. The smoke signals were used instead of a first press release for the announcement of names. In the case of the commission to Mario, I said, I would like for you to create like a jingle or a song that is released before the opening of the Biennale and sets the tone for the exhibition that's released in the radio waves. I envisioned using the radio and the radio waves, something in the air, to be what was being explored.
Yeah.
So there were many different things that we used, many different tools and instruments, and also ways of communication. Mario got too excited, so he made the song, which is definitely not a jingle, and he he created an entire album that totals 8 pieces.
Yeah.
And as a way of working, which is his methodology for many years, he does a lot of research, sometimes field research, and many times also archival research.
Yeah.
And he's been doing that for decades. And he has always tried to find a way in which to tell a microhistory that can lead to thinking about a wider context.
Yeah.
So he asked me, in principle, what were some of the investigations, who were some of the artists, what was some of the materials that had been gathered as part of the curatorial research. And among that, I said, you know, I think that there's a bunch. We talked about many artists, I said, but I think you'll be particularly interested in the materials that have surfaced in the archives while researching the Greek artist Takis and the Filipino artist David Medalla. In particularly at the archives of Takis in the United States, located at MIT, as part of a kind of new art and technology program in the 1960s that had begun there at school, which still exists today in a different iteration. But Georgi Kipes had been inviting artists in the 1960s to be working at the university, artists that had already shown a kind of inclination or interest in new materials and innovation. And Takis had been working for some time already with magnets and magnetic material.
Yeah.
So he was invited there.
As a sound process or as a physical material?
Well, actually, not yet until the mid-1960s.
Okay.
And this then comes back to one document that didn't pertain to the original piece that we were looking for, Takis, which he had developed at MIT, which was a kind of machine that created energy that was underground. He made a patent. He sold it to the U.S. Navy. This is early in the days, and things really politically changed for him. But ultimately, among the materials there was a dialogue that had been recorded in typewriter. There was a transcript of David Medalla and Takis get together, mid-60s, Paris, and they have this conversation pretty much because Takis is starting to create his first works incorporating sound and specifically music. And so they very much have a conversation around that. And the lyrics that we heard, it's very much inspired by this. So on the one hand, when Takis and David Medalla are talking, they talk about his interest. Medalla says, it's like, how did you become interested in music? And he talked about it being a kind of fluid interest coming from someone working with magnets and with these forces that come together. He said that he had been thinking of Apollo, you know, the god of music, but also representing the sun. And he was walking, he's thinking about this while he's walking in Paris to the Palais Royal. He wants to make this sculpture, et cetera, et cetera. And then he directly speaks about, you know, about the fact that, yeah, that if you turn around and look at the sky and you think profoundly, those rays can actually be also met by someone else in a very distant place.
Yeah.
And both of these two interlocutors can be communicating.
Yeah.
Right? And so he was thinking of a way in which, yeah, in which this kind of wish or dream or feeling or emotion can actually be communicated, be felt, be expressed through the concentration of one's sort of sight, not just to the sky, but specifically to the sun, as a kind of source of power that connects people through its sun rays wherever you are.
But initially not as an auditive experience, but just to see how that could translate into something else.
See how it could translate into something else. And he makes a kind of connection between this constant presence and also this this omnipresent being of worldly being of the sun, warming each other, but also of the music and of being the god of music, Apollo, and all the Greek myths and all this. Now, there is something that they, in Medalla, is very specific in sort of discussing within that conversation, is that it is impossible to hear the music at that time. They talk about in these days, it's impossible to hear the music. There is so much noise. Mm. And they are referring to the war that's happening.
Is the 60s Vietnam War?
Yeah. Oh, okay. This is the 60s Vietnam War. There's a lot of protest. Takis is very much active in this. So is David Medalla. They're part of different artist collectives that are part of resistance movements. Mm-hmm. And I think that, that for him is like, how do we come back to knowing like that we share resources rather than distinguish them and fight for them? So it's very utopic, of course. It's very beautiful.
If I don't take a jump in here, when you spoke with Mario Garcia Torres about this, did you find a parallel in these situations?
Yes, but I will tell you that...
Because it seems almost self-evident, you know, that this necessity, this urgency has a similar kind of circumstance, given the time that we are in and the time that he was commissioned, which you said, 2013.
Yeah. Well... There are different moments where the 1960s, rather than the 2013, was being discussed and any conflict of that time, and at the Biennale in particular. Now, Mario and I didn't discuss all the materials that we shared with him. There was a huge file of so much documents. Mario picked specifically this exchange among many others that I'm sure informed him in different ways. And now, the exchange of Takis and Medalla is not even... It inspires the song and the places of the song, but the transcription of that is not actually a transliteration in the lyrics. It's completely different. For example, that in the same transcription of Takis and Medalla is being referenced May 1965. However, their own dialogue is happening in January of 1966. Now, in the case of the song, it begins in May. The sun as a spectral star is of course referenced there, but Guaiba, the port, and the Palais Royal, meaning Guaiba in Porto Alegre and the Palais Royal in Paris, are mentioned there as being all connected with, you know, spirits, people being connected through the sun and through these messages that are not necessarily spoken in the song, but I think that are very clearly messages that are both emotional and casual. And I think that the rhythm of the song is very much kind of expressing those notes.
Is this like a connecting soundtrack then also? I mean, his original commission was a jingle. I think it's very interesting that it became an album, a full LP.
It's an album, which brings me back to your question around was war or any of these political conflicts or struggles mentioned in the song. There's 8 pieces, and one of them is it's not a song, it's the only instrumental piece, it's a short piece, and it is inspired by the poem of Dede Ferlauto, which was a poem that this Brazilian poet wrote in the prison island in the Guaíba.
Oh, wow.
And that's...
In the lake.
Yeah. And that is, in fact, during the Brazilian dictatorship. And I think that the poem is dated early 1970s.
Oh,
And so my thinking is that, I mean, every single piece makes reference to the site and to different moments. And in the case of this piece being developed there was because the prison island was, in fact, one of the venues for the Biennale. We didn't modify it nor bring audiences there, nor install artworks. We instead created a whole program around it called Island Sessions. And this goes into the wider investigation of the Biennale, which was on different forms of climate change, whether that is an emotional climate or a political climate, and of course, definitely the weather, right? So there's always a fluid address, I would say, of almost every artwork in the exhibition that begins with a kind of chit-chat, what is that word? That small talk conversation around the weather. Like in the song, you know, it's May, it's cold.
Yeah.
So it almost every artwork, whether it's a narrative or not, has at the start or your first impression that you have is that it's something to do with the weather. And it would either take you to the weather in terms of a political climate, the weather in terms of an emotional climate, and of course, the climate that allows, that's connected and that allows for invention or experimentation or playing. And
how do you so here's the situation of that commission jingle. The transcript is found, it becomes inspiring, so in that sense your curatorial role is alongside Mario in his research. How is that conversation? Is there anything you can reveal about that that facilitation from your curatorial perspective to an artist who basically finds himself being very inspired by this very small fragment, yet within a context of a biennial that has a very far-reaching resonance, at least in its topic, its theme?
I think that it goes many ways. The idea is trying to create and make visible different networks that are effective and that are created with different political climates, or that are created with the emotional climate of a time and collective work to a large extent. So my thinking is that there's a lot of things at play. I'll give you another example that would seem only a production-related factor, but it's actually equally relevant to the practice of Mario Garcia Torres in the long run. Hotel Ganso, which I've mentioned, is not just the site, and in this case, actually also the sponsor of that week-long period where Mario is there with a group of musicians that he invites to be able to co-write the lyrics with them. He's very much heavy-handed in terms of, like, certainly it's his commission, it's his idea, he has the research materials, but he is very, you know, collaborative. And in the case of making a band, is it's like one of these most collaborative.
It has to gel also.
It has to gel, you know, it's emotion, people play this track with another, like they're all there together. And those efforts around jamming is very much how he develops his work. So it's not, it's something that is embedded very much in the culture also of the music scene, which I think that for Mario has been, or the musical group, I would say, the rock band. He's done so much work over the years with music, and I think that it has to do a lot because of his own collaborative spirit, and because I think that doing research, at least how he's been doing it for so long, it's a very solitary work, the one of researching and writing. So when he comes to compose, let alone a music, a video piece, he's very selective of who he's partnering with.
Yeah.
There's one person, for example, in this album, who's one of the primary musicians, and he also does percussion, who is Gabriel, who is now, he has an artistic name called Solucel.
Yeah.
Solucel and Mario have done a lot of collaborations.
If we can take what you just mentioned about the many future projects that came, perhaps maybe not specifically came from this one commission for the Mercosur biennial, but that he did after that. There is a longer second piece that we're going to share with the audience. Is this a good moment to introduce it?
Yeah, and I think that I've mentioned a couple of people already that were important to this music album. I think that it's also important, one of the close collaborators with Solucel and with Mario in this album of 2013 was Neto Garcia, who had an accident a couple of years later and passed away, unfortunately. Marianne Russis, and she does vocals in other songs and is a great artist in her own right. Marcos Castro, a visual artist, he's the one that did the beautiful album cover and And so what was the original question that you asked me? I forgot. What a disaster. What was the original question?
You went on a credits tangent.
Because I wanted to mention all the people that...
I think, Sophia...
that were important to this piece.
I think it's very important that you mentioned it also. Not enough people do.
Okay, so what was the original question?
Well, you mentioned earlier, and I think this is interesting, you mentioned the fact that from that moment on and through these collaborations, as we said, you know, working in a group, working collaboratively, working as a band... things have to gel. So often when you pick up on somebody who you gel well with, in this case, Solusel, that's a reoccurring sort of collaboration. Other people maybe come in and step out again and come back again. But you mentioned two things, one being that from that moment on, there was a lot more of these kind of productions from Mario in his practice. And you mentioned that there was a certain attempt or working with the notion of voiceover between the two.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I thought that was a good lead-in to the second track that we wanted to share. Also because it's a very long track, we're going to sort of selectively meander through it, right? Yeah.
So it's a very good point. Thank you for bringing me back to hear. I was in Porto Alegre already.
It sounds good to me.
Yeah. But look, Mario has been working with sound and with music for a long time. With music specifically, I think that he really has, like, I don't know if it's the seed of many of his works after, but he was living in LA at the start of the 2000s, and he did a really, really good work called, they call them Border Blasters. Mm-hmm. And that's a work from 2004. It's a short video that looks terrible, and you know it's basically music. It looks like a kind of a homemade video or homemade music video, but it's quite interesting. And the piece speaks about the phenomena of border blasters, which is set up in the border of Mexico and the United States, where the radio stations are set up in Mexico, but their audience is for the United States. Mm. They are legally sited in Mexico so that they could do things or say things or play things that cannot be done so in the United States for whatever kind of restrictions they would have. For Mario, to who you speak has been a question, or who you make art and from where you make it has been a question that has been throughout his entire trajectory. And he's used many different languages, such as sort of conceptual art, to the music video, I would say, to the very idea of the voiceover in a video essay. I do think that the video essay is not just like a genre, it has its own language, and it interjects image and sound and text, whether it's captions, saying something that's different to the rhythm or the lyrics of a song or a music piece, etc. So I think that that's an important mention. I think that the second work, which is really the one that I want us to listen to, that is the groundbreaking piece for Mario to move away from this more didactic voiceover that he had been working with, however poetic his grammar was. And it was at times voiceover, but I would also say that at times it was just the, for example, image captioned, mm-hmm. not as intertitled in film, but he did many slide works, 35 millimeter slide works that he actually captioned. So the sound or music was coming from another device, for example, and the text was directly made onto the negative. Mm-hmm. So in the slide, no? But where he really broke this thing of text, sound, and a voiceover, a kind of a just read, you know, read essay or speech, but instead did music, was in 2009. And I do think that this is a breakthrough for him to really work with sound and music quite differently. And that was of an artwork that was commissioned by the Berkeley Art Museum. Back in 2009, the curator there was Elizabeth Thomas, who did really good things as the so-called Matrix curator, which is this kind of historic program for that museum in the West Coast of the United States that invites so-called emerging artists to have their first museum show and commission a new work. And, you know, it historically has been quite important. Anyhow, Elizabeth invites Mario. They show one other work of the slide pieces that he had been doing, but he really did an innovation within his own way of working by creating this piece called I Don't Know If That's the Cause. And this artwork consists of a slideshow, but connected to it is a sound piece that begins with a voiceover and then breaks into song. So why don't we listen first to the voiceover, just a bit. The work in general is almost shy of 12 minutes, but let's listen to the first couple of minutes so you get a sense of how he moves from a voiceover into lyrics with a song.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the southeastern coast of St. Croix is what once was called the Grape Tree Bay Hotel. Its remains have decayed over the years, the decades. As a consequence, or with the excuse of the submarine warfare, the Virgin Islands were bought by the United States long before the establishment of the hotel. Under the new political climate, by mid-century, the economy of the island had reshaped. Sugar plantation and rum production had been replaced by tourism. The Grape Tree Bay was part of the new continental enthusiasm. One could say that the story of the hotel is surrounded by deceptions and disappointments. Even before it opened its doors in the early 60s, the enterprise was already the motive of legal and economic disputes.
Yeah, so we're listening here already, like the voiceover, meaning Mario writes the text. As usual, he's an incredible writer. But here the music is composed to this piece.
Yeah.
And we'll listen right now to how and when the song kicks in. But two things. This is 2009. The first piece that we listen to is 2013.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the voice that we hear and also pretty much the producer of this piece is Mario Lopez Landa. And we'll listen to a woman sing, and that's Chantal Crisca, also an artist in her own right. And what's important of this piece is we're already listening that it's speaking actually of a hotel. When Mario got the invitation at that hotel, Hotel Ganso in Mexico, which is where the 2013 piece happened, he said this is a perfect location to do the record of or for the Bienal de Mercosur. See?
Right.
So that's why I say it goes different ways. It wasn't that we as producers of this Biennale got that sponsor,
yep,
or went to pay for that. They're like, no, we'll co-produce. But it was Mario that made the link. It's like, I have an invitation to do a residency here. Wouldn't it be nice that from, you know, this Cape Town, we mix the whole thing of the sea and the distance and the sun that we're communicating. But also,
he wanted to make it all part of the band. Basically.
He wanted to make it part of the band, and also his sort of bringing in that hotel was part of the, yeah, was part of the relationship with this one. This work is about a hotel. Now let's listen to the sound, to the music, to the song in this now.
Because we were just listening to the voiceover.
We went a little bit down, but now let's see. I want you to listen to, yeah, how he incorporates or how his text changes from being a voiceover to lyric.
Okay.
People pay attention to them then, hardly any these days. Since their inception, it seems they were also the product of a hard time, a foundational time. Fate has dramatically changed their context, but surprisingly, they seem to play the same unimposing role, almost unaware of their importance.
background. It's going to continue running for more, but I think that here, what's the role of these lyrics, what's the role of Mario at that hotel, is that he's actually has visited that hotel, has gone to do the research to the Virgin Islands in the Caribbean, because a Grape Tree Hotel is a place that a young artist called Daniel Buren went to do a summer job there in the 1960s.
Okay.
And painted, as part of his job, was to kind of make the hotel nicer. It was like some kind of family collection. I don't know what how he ended up there, but there's Daniel Buren painting all these murals. And this part of the lyric, figurative murals, by the way. And we are then listening to a song that's speaking very much from his position, from that young Buren in the 1960s, about the difficulties it has to actually establish himself there, meaning to actually be there at the hotel, to create a practice there,
right,
to actually even, you know, imagine him doing that kind of work as an artist, et cetera, et cetera. And this, if I'm not mistaken, was a letter that he was writing to his parents. I don't know how Mario got that letter. I don't think that that was in the archives of Berkeley, which was, or maybe, or I don't know how.
But it is based
on
an actual letter.
It's based on an actual letter. Okay. And a lot of the archives of this time, which is going to be clearly somewhat different from this time, is greatly epistolary, meaning it's not just a bureaucratic document, but Mario gets documents of all kinds. Daniel Buren had also an exhibition there when he was a young artist. In you know, he was invited to do that show also in Berkeley decades before Mario. Ultimately, Mario went to visit the hotel, which, if you actually listen through the entire voiceover, it's a hotel that was abandoned, and he finds it abandoned. It was a, you know, nice luxury hotel, but over the years it was coming down until 1989. It was completely shuttered since a hurricane hit there.
Okay.
And the hotel has been, you know, the building was still standing when Mario was there. The murals are there.
And the figurative murals.
Yeah, the figurative murals of Buren. And many, you know, and you could see some element or not from the hotel there. You know, it was a, yeah, it was clearly one of these kind of romantic ruins of the Caribbean. And for good or bad reasons, I'm not going to judge it, it was left there standing. Mario went there. The slideshow that this music sound voiceover is part of involves two slide projectors. One of them is a slide projector that has pretty much all of the 58 slides, 57 slides. And then there's one slide projector that only has one slide. The one slide, a historic image, a black and white image of a woman in the pool of the Grape Tree Bay Hotel. This is happening in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands. And then the other images are the same site, the same hotel, images in color taken by Mario and printed as slides.
At the present time.
At the present time that he visited, yeah. The piece was shown in February of 2009. So this the photographs were taken a year before in 2008. And he had been working a lot. This was one of a number of works that he had done for quite some time, where Mario had been visiting places, and specifically hotels also, where artists had retreated for some time to work, or had hotels that artists had thought of developing, places where they had created a new work, etc. So his visits to this hotel, Grape Tree Bay, was for the reason of finding the murals of Buren.
And that return of himself as an artist being there.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to show this piece not just because it's that first work where Mario blends essay and lyrics, and where a sound is something that is really composed so that it's musical. The treatment here, he's very focused on there being, you know, percussion, of there being a kind of connection with music of the time, and for sure music that is associated to the Caribbean to some extent, at least in the instruments being used. Interestingly, I would think that Mario also knew that that hotel itself had commissioned an album record, actually, in 1975. And that was done by Pedrito Altieri and his steel band.
Yeah.
And Mario has exhibited this work meaning the work of Yo No Sé, Aquí Sí, Je Ne Sais, I don't know if that's a cause. He's exhibited this work generally with a vitrine by the side where he includes ephemera, souvenirs that come from the hotel, including this record album commissioned in 1975 to Pedrito Altieri to promote the hotel. It's called Sundown at Grape Tree Bay Hotel. And I couldn't find that on Spotify, but we did find something else.
We were totally enjoying Come Back to the Virgin Islands.
Come Back to the Virgin Islands, which was also a promotional album record commissioned. And the album cover there is actually like a plane.
It's beautiful.
You know, so that you
thoroughly
can...
Thoroughly enchanting steel drum as well.
Yeah, so that you can go fly there. So anyhow, this work, originally done for Berkeley Museum for an exhibition there, was eventually acquired for a collection that I used to work in a foundation, the Colección Patricia Phelps de Cisneros. And that work, she donated, Patti Cisneros donated it kindly as part of a larger group of works of her private collection that were selected by the curators at MoMA and now eventually donated to that museum for the public's enjoyment. This work was shown at MoMA in New York in 2013. And what Mario did was a new soundtrack for it. And that is really what I think... It's quite impressive, like, I think how this new soundtrack for the piece or the new music for the piece really stretches his capacity for understanding kind of the pulse of the times and not just setting the tone of the rhythm, but also understanding that with time comes new rhythms and the way in which we relate to subject matter, to geography, to sensuality, to an archive itself and to micro histories ultimately, say through a ballad or a folk song. And in this case with music that is much more contemporary because it's combining R&B and soul and Latin and, you know, hip hop. And, you know, if you think of anything that has happened musically in the Caribbean, it's precisely because we see it all over the world in terms of much more cumbia. Caribbean music, much more I'm terrible at this, cochabacha or whatever, bachicola, or I don't know how it's called, but, you know, certainly a combination of Caribbean and hip-hop and just amazing. So
the year is? What year?
So the year is 2023. It's actually a group exhibition curated by Ines Katzenstein, and it focuses on, or it presents a number of the donations of the contemporary art collection. Presented by Patti Cisneros, gifting to the MoMA, and among the works is this one. And in this case, the song or the music pieces are two.
Yeah.
And I wanted to listen to just one briefly, one of the two pieces, because now it is in Spanish. It's part of an album called Aquí Sigues, and it's called Yo No Sé. So the Je Ne Frenchie of Daniel Buren is completely different now.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if that's the cause, and now the title is I Don't Know.
I Don't Know. And it's very different, and in this case, it's made with a musician from Mexico who's very young called MFM Malafe. And he is a musician, a producer, and... a singer, a writer, you know, he's like an all-rounded talent. And for the album Aquí Sigues, the first one is called Yo No Sé. And I want us to listen to it and just a bit and then, and then talk a little bit about it afterwards.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Estoy todavía.
Yeah. So maybe you recognize a bit some of the rhythm. Well, not the rhythm, but some of the... Yeah, you do?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah, exactly.
I think that... what else? I mean, it's completely different. Did you like it?
I liked it very much. And it had like a double beat where the original one had a single beat.
Okay.
No, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So I went to the exhibition opening and I was actually quite surprised. I'm like, what?
Did you not know it was a new soundtrack?
I hadn't heard it until I arrived to the museum and went into the gallery. And I would say that from the very first piece that we presented, I mean, I think that, yeah, he was able to kind of match that tone. You know, it's not bossa nova or anything, but I think that, you know, to at least what we commercially know of Brazil, mm-hmm. of a specific time, I would say the Caetano Veloso pieces, you know, so that the work was, you know, much more, I don't know, I kind of feel them that because they're slower, that, I mean, they're just not for dancing. Suddenly this one, you know, the beat is much more fun, no?
Sure, it's more pump.
Yeah, more pop.
I can't put it any...
Exactly.
That's how I would describe it.
Exactly, it's more pop.
Yeah.
More pop, More popular, no? Yeah. Like it could be in the radio.
It could be on the radio.
Yeah.
On which side of the border?
I don't know, but that's a good question. Yeah. And I think that much more now with the political situation, yeah, on which side of the border, but definitely the work is being done by a Mexican musician. It is presented at MoMA in New York. Yeah. I do think that changing language to English and Spanish is, I would say, a kind of, a significant move for that to be in the museum. Hmm. It already moves a kind of, at least vocally and rhythmically, the reference to the Western canon.
Yeah.
It remains with the same site. It is the Virgin Islands, you know, a kind of within the Caribbean, but it does question if you go through the entire work, which is 12 minutes, it does question whether the political climate has to do, not just the hurricane, the actual weather has to do with the decline of the hotel there and with the labor struggles that were happening at the island. And
you're saying this in comparison to the quote-unquote original soundtrack for the work and the narrative of it?
The narrative remains the same.
Right.
I think that...
The language is different.
But the language is different. But I also feel that in this case, M. Malafe has interpreted completely different, you know, the positionality of the, you know, the position of the subject.
Right.
So, for example, I think that there's two songs in this album, Aquí Sigues, and maybe we should end with...
You have the opportunity to end with the second one.
I have it all planned. Will I listen to your podcast so that I can see how I what I presented in relation?
To make sure it's still according to your notes.
I knew that I could finish with one piece. And so for me, I definitely...
For the audience at home, we were planning just three. So I think it's lovely that we get the fourth one as an extra.
No, it's just three.
Huh?
Is it?
Yeah, it is four now.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you're going to tell us something about this last piece that we're leaving the audience with.
Okay. Well, it's the same. It's the same album, let's just say, and it's the same artwork.
But this is important, right?
It's important.
All along that all of these things are inextricably connected somehow.
They are. And I think that what's important of this song called Aquí Sigues, which in this case, it doesn't take the position of, say, Daniel Buren or Mario Garcia Torres or someone from the island. It actually speaks on behalf of what I think is the building, or on behalf of the murals, or on behalf of the site. So I think that, you know, it's a different, I mean, yes, it's a human singing, but the voice or what is being voiced is something to do with with a kind of living archive, which is an artwork or a building in terms of its own architecture and design, and the way that history has impressed upon itself in terms of the construction. So, it's balanced. I just wanted to say that the start and the end is balanced.
I don't think anybody doubted it when they tuned
into
this
podcast. I just wanted to curate this in so that we begin and end with a kind of same kind of experience. I mean,
whatever that experience is, Sophia, yeah. Thank you very much for being allowing us into your living room, the Listening Tide, to be here and to be our guest. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. Maybe I will say that exhibition was so important to me and to many of the artists, and maybe I can give a shout out to the president, Patricia Fossati Druk. I hadn't thought about it, but I could still speak of that exhibition that happened over a decade ago, but feel so close to it emotionally and curatorially, intellectually, and that I still go back to it so often to rethink aspects of it or to revisit what the artists are doing. Yeah.
Thank you for making your memories current for us. Urgent.
Gracias.
Take care.
Las historias son contadas por sus imágenes. Las figuras se convierten en trazos del paso del tiempo. Las rocas, la tierra, el reclamo de la naturaleza por lo que es suyo. El espejismo de creer que alguna vez fue nuestro. La sonrisa nostálgica de lo que claramente ya nunca verás más. Pero siempre, siempre recordarás con anhelo y melancolía. M. Malafé, el equipo negro.
Aquí sigues, como deteniendo el tiempo. Aquí sigues, como aguantando el calor. Con los brazos desvanecidos, con tus muros entreabiertos. Aquí sigues, esperándonos. El cansancio de tus hombros, el aire de tu anhelo. El arte de tu escombro, las ruinas de tu pelo. No eres de nadie, más la tierra siente celos. Mi corazón sigue aquí, oye por favor. Hay murales que se escuchan pero no se pueden ver. Hay caminos que dejaron las huellitas de tus pies. He intentado olvidarte, mas nunca te abandoné. Si es que un día de estos regresas, por favor avísame. Aquí sigues, como deteniendo el tiempo. Aquí sigues, como aguantando el calor. Con los brazos desvanecidos, con tus muros entreabiertos. Aquí sigues, esperándonos. Y que llega la cumbia, dale más sabrosa. Es noche de rumba, suena peligrosa. Y que llega la cumbia, dale más sabrosa. Es noche de rumba, suena peligrosa. Suena peligrosa, suena peligrosa. Que se da la cumbia, dale más sabrosa. En noche de rumba suena peligrosa. Y que se da la cumbia, dale más sabrosa. En noche de rumba suena peligrosa. Y que suene la cumbia, dale más sabrosa. Y que suene la cumbia, dale más sabrosa. Y que se da la cumbia, dale más sabrosa. En noche de rumba suena peligrosa. Y que llega la cumbia, dale más sabrosa. Es noche de rumba, suena peligrosa. Aquí sigues, como deteniendo el tiempo. Aquí sigues, como aguantando el calor. Con los brazos desvanecidos, con tus muros entreabiertos. Aquí sigues.